good big news with the Machete 2 and 3.
Yeah. That was exciting. We did so well with Machete that they asked for another one. They said, well, let's do the third one too. At least the trailer. I got to get the trailer out for part 3. That's going to be so funny.
Well, you seem to have so many projects on your plate. How do you figure out what is coming next?
You kind of work on a lot of things to see which ones are ready to go first. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of why you've always developed multiple projects at once, so that when one is readier than the other, that goes right into the slot, so you're not waiting. So that's what used to happen is, you know, write a project, direct it, edit it, finish it. Oh, now what's next? Then I have to start writing something. It's like, oh, I gotta develop more of them in conjunction so that we can be, you can either layer them, like animated films could be being made while we're shooting. Mm-hmm. So it's a good mix of doing animation with live action. And then some of these live actions, like a Sin City and a Fire and Ice and a Machete, could shoot back to back to back, and the effects being done simultaneously, because that takes time.
Yeah.
So those could be staggered more. So you could just go through a whole stint where you shoot two or three movies in a row and then edit and put them together, and they'll be done at different times.
How does the new deal that you guys have worked out affect you as a filmmaker? Does it give you more freedom?
More freedom completely. Because what usually holds anyone up, if you know anyone who's ever trying to make a movie, you say, how's it going? Oh, well, we're still waiting for the funding. It's always the funding and the funding, or the studio's still trying to make a decision. The filmmaker's already made the decision if they're going to make something or not, and the red tape is usually what slows that down. By you being your own studio, you just say, I'm green lighting this one. This one, you know, is really feels like it's ready. This one, not quite. Mm-hmm. You know, like with Sin City, we're still working on the script because we know as soon as it's ready, we just start shooting it. It won't take very long to prep it. So, it gives you a lot of freedom as far as, wow, I have an idea and I can actually just go start making it. Everyone's got a job tomorrow. It's, you know, it's just a nice feeling, and it lets you concentrate more. If your effort doesn't go to wrangling money from somebody else, but actually just working on the story and the characters and making the best movie possible. So it really gives you a lot of freedom and focuses the energy in the right direction.
And then you're not under anyone else's thumb on the release date and everything else that you're pushing for.
Yeah, you go to them and you go use them for distribution and decide that mutually, but you actually own it and control it. Like when I made the Spy Kid movies, I made that with the Weinsteins. We had a great relationship, but when they left Disney actually was the ones who had been paying for all of that. So they owned the material. The Weinsteins didn't even own it anymore. So I thought, why did I work so hard to keep it so low budget when you don't even ultimately own it, but someone else does? I should just pay for those myself and own them myself. That way I created it. I should own it. I should actually own it. You know, like George Lucas did. He owned his own movies. So I'm really taken aback more to that.
Are you going to try to distribute them through the majors, or are you going to have your own distribution out?
I think that where it would go into eventually would be having our own distribution. That would be the next step. But for now, we would use the distribution that is in place at studios that you just pay a fee for, and but you control the whole production of the movie. You control what ideas you think people are going to want to see in the future.
And how are you working the money? I mean,
but that's where it would head, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
And then how are you working the money? You having venture capital, was put money into a pool, and then you're... And so you have like an established pool.
We have an established
pool. As opposed to going
out
and getting money every time you want to do...
We have an equity investors who then, with that, we know how much we can get from mezzanine debt and then how much is going to be like foreign sales, for instance. And so we can put that together very quickly once we have the equity. The equity is the hardest part to get. And we already have two equity partners that have the money in so that we can just keep revolving. And then after a point, we won't just have our own equity. We won't even need that anymore.
Okay.
So it's like a revolving source. And because I keep my money... I spend it very wisely. Coming from a family of 10 kids, I couldn't even spend other people's money. I was just always trying to think of a creative way around it, what I think makes the movies more interesting. I can make that money stretch quite a bit. We can do a lot of different productions with it.
And how are you going to work the eventual distribution? Because you said you had some ideas for once you go beyond the studios.
You mean if it was direct distribution or something like that?
If you were doing your own distribution, mm-hmm. would it be... Direct or
it would probably be direct if we got to that point. It would probably be direct. I wouldn't probably, if I was going to do theatrical, I would probably use the distributors that are already in place that do it so well.
You already help other new filmmakers. Will this let you help even more?
Yes, because if you have your own studio, I mean, I've already had filmmakers who've just heard about it, this production company already, coming and bringing me their scripts and saying, you know, we got some financiers from five different places who are kind of interested in this, but if we did it at your place, it makes so much more sense, and I believe in that filmmaker, and I believe in what they're doing. I can actually pay for it, and they can make it there, and we can turn it, and it gives the filmmaker so much more confidence in their idea that they can actually make a better movie because they go after somebody who actually really believes in it, as opposed to me going and convincing people who don't want to give me the time and day. You know, it's not very good for the psyche as an artist to be having a battle with that.
The heavy metal relationship is a cool one with that for the, you know, for anybody aspiring.
Oh, right. Anybody who can come and bring in their ideas. Because so many people out there are fans also, like I'm a fan, and they might have ideas.
I was trying to understand that you want people to pitch heavy metal ideas just as for the movie?
Yes, but it could be for the other applications of it as well. Because we might have internet versions of heavy metal. We might have other applications for it and other cross-media.
How are you going to protect yourself in that kind of direct access against someone, you know?
With lawsuits, there's precedents for that, like Project Greenlight, and there's a certain wording that you would put in when you go submit. It'll say, I agree to these terms, that if there's something that is similar, because there's not a whole lot. There's certain variations that you can have, but pretty much, hey, there's a heavy metal girl in there. I had a heavy metal girl. Well, they kind of all have heavy metal girls. And they kind of all have robots. But, you know, you can kind of, there are protections, and we've done the wording for that already. So when you go to the site, already the site's already up to submit. It'll tell you pretty clearly what it is. And I'm a very fair person, so it wouldn't be something where we're just going to steal people's, like, no one's going to steal your ideas. We have our own ideas. I just think it's really cool that the fans can be a part of it as well.
So you already have a script in place for heavy metal?
I have a script for some of the stories. We haven't brought in other filmmakers yet who would bring their own. For my own, I have some, yes.
Oh, and when is that production going to start?
We can start right away with some of the stories, and then as other people come on, we can add that to it. So we're starting already with pre-production on that, which is writing the script, finding other filmmakers, other people who can come be a part of it, and already doing tests of what it would look like.
Oh, so it's going to be several stories. Forgive my ignorance, but it's going to be several stories.
Several stories, kind of like with Sin City or Pulp Fiction, how they had separate stories. It's usually the format was always an anthology, different artists coming together and putting something together in the world of heavy metal. That was kind of the overall is the world of it.
Okay, and then the Frazetta film, when does that go into production?
We're already writing the script now and doing pre-production art, and we're going to start shooting some tests, and as soon as the script's ready, so probably early next year we shoot that.
Okay. And those are all going to be shot down in Austin?
Yes.
Go, Austin.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, on a creative level, you know, when you have movies that are so bold, like Machete and Sin City, what do you do when you're approaching sequels for these movies that you're going to be able to sort of, there's a lot of fan anticipation, I know, especially with Sin City, since there's been so much time. How do you sort of address that kind of anticipation to make sure that you can deliver, you know, the story?
You know, it always comes back to yourself, because I mean, I too would only want to make it if I felt that I was going to be excited. The first Sin City, I didn't make it with the audience in mind at all. I thought, because who knew they would even want a black and white movie in that style? They might think it's just too weird. I really wanted to see it. So that's really what you got to go by. Am I really passionate about this? So before I would make a sequel, I'd have to make sure I was really passionate about it. If you go make a movie just for somebody, it's probably not going to be very good, because one, they won't be appreciated, because they can tell it didn't come from the right place, and two, you're not doing it for the right reasons. So really, it always comes back to me. When I read the script of Sin City 2, does it move me enough to where I say, I really have to make this? I know the audience already wants it, but that's not good enough. It's got to really be something that I feel like I can really bring to them and say, this is what you've been waiting for. So it comes back to just yourself. And like for another Machete, I wouldn't do another Machete just because the first one was successful, unless I really felt I was really excited to go do it and I had ideas that really made me laugh and that I thought would be really fun. I wouldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah, well, I know Danny was at the New Bev a few weeks ago, and he was just so excited about
it. He's excited. We've been talking about it so much.
Have you guys talked?
We're always talking about these ideas that, like, my God, we could actually do that.
But how do you, like, take scenes, like, with, like, the intestine, repelling and all that kind of stuff, and how do you go beyond that for a sequel? Because I know there's a lot of us that are just really curious, like, how do you take that to another level?
Oh, you'd come up with something. It'd have to be something that was organic to it. And when I'm thinking about it now, I'm sure there's something we could do that really honors that sort of thing. But it's got to be crazy. It's got to be fun. And those are kind of easy to come up with, actually. When I walked on the set, the first day, it wasn't even following the script. I walked in and said, okay, now he's going to chop off this guy's hand, pick up his arm with a gun still in, and shoot. And they go, everybody's looking at this. This is not in the script. Well, no, I just came up with it this morning. You get inspired. You're on the set, you get inspired. So I have no fear that we won't think of something. We'll think of something when we get there.
How did your involvement with Robert come about?
Well, AMD's been working with Robert for almost a decade now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
From a technology point of view. And we've got this new accelerated processor APU technology this year. Robert's got all the new movies with QuickDraw. It was a good inflection point to even kind of take it to the next level. As I said, we really envision this as a fellowship. You know, we have shared sense of ideals. You know, Robert's a rebel. AMD's a rebel. Mm-hmm. We're fighting the norms and the institutions. We want to give vivid experiences. We have technology that enables that, and Robert's got the creativity. So it's a really good fellowship together.
I'm my little studio in Austin, and inside there's a little digital studio where I've got three artists. You know, most CG companies have hundreds of people, and we would be doing tons of shots out of there. People would say, how are you doing that? Well, I got three artists. Like, how is that impossible? And I realized, well, it's also because we also got their machines. Because they're able to render these things out. But if you think about the staggering amount of work these guys were able to do, and by just keeping it small, it keeps it, I don't want it to grow bigger. You don't need to if you've got the horsepower and you've got the technology. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really push technology a lot, because I you know, challenge them. Saying, I don't want to grow my operation, but I need them to do more. So how do we do that? And so they bring me better and better and better technology. They go, this is where it's headed. So let's make the right things for these people. So they really listen to their consumers.
Wow, and then you're putting a fourth dimension in Spy Kids.
Yeah, Spy Kids is the fourth dimension.
Nice.
And people say, what is that? What technology went into that?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, this is really but it's really the idea. Half of it is the ideas. Idea is really fun. It's a really fun idea. It's fun to see the audience get so into it, and it really does draw them into the movie because they feel like they're experiencing the same thing. The characters are. It's really funny.
So there's been a lot of test screenings already, or
I've tested a couple times.
And the audience is really.
My kids go crazy. Give me the cards.
Is it like an homage to like William Castle type of
oh,
sort of story?
Well, there was an old John Waters movie in the 80s called Polyester.
Yeah.
He had scratches. It didn't work very well because it was the old scratches stuff. Everything smelled the same after a while.
Yeah.
But the idea was genius.
He put some foul
smells
to it.
And in a kid's movie, it's just so fun. It's so fun. Because we have a baby and we have a dog, so you can imagine the smells that pop up. But it's really surprising and very funny.
Do you think that's something that's going to catch on, like trying to do even more things that, like, you already had 3D, now 4D, all these.
It's kind of hard to just go do a 3D movie after somebody's gone and done 4D. You're kind of like, oh, it's 4. We've had 4D. What are we going to go back to 3D for? People kind of one-upsmanship.
We'll do 5D. Sensor Out.
Yeah.
Sensor Out was cool. Now, are there any plans to go into gaming and television?
Yeah. Yeah, we can get into. We'd be able to do those as well.
I mean, are there plans either?
Oh, are there plans? Direct plans with any
with
of these?
With your studio, like with the Frigetta project, or with Heavy Metal?
I think probably online and interactive first.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly keeping it open to be able to do that. I think we could have done that with Sin City, for instance. Mm-hmm. They always were after us to do an HBO Sin City type thing, but we just didn't want to do that. We wanted to go another movie first, but. Once you build a world that people really enjoy, they want to experience it in different areas. So that's what this kind of company does. It has you thinking about that from an early stage, thinking about where we can already be building these things in, so we're not being reactive, but we're being proactive.
And or any kind of comics or digital comics or motion.
Heavy Metal
comics.
Lends itself really well to that. We're going to use these a lot also for experimentation in these different areas and seeing what we can do with it, and using just all of our imagination, we'll have the firepower, we'll have the ideas, we'll have the concepts, and then we just go and we can try it out. So it's all proof of concept on the spot that we can do.
Wow.
It's pretty neat.
Because you have the final approval.
Yeah, we have the final approval, so you don't have to go, let me go ask the boss. You are the boss. The boss might not, depending on what kind of day he's having, he might like it, he might not. So.
Do you think you're going to do 4D again? Are we going to have more smells?
We have more smells? I could see it in a Machete movie.
Yeah. Perfect.
You can always do a porn movie
for
a double D.
For a double D. That's good. 5D might come. If we do another Spy Kids, it would be 5D. I have a fifth dimension in
Do you have an idea for that?
Yeah, because I was kind of afraid. I thought, okay, I'm going to do 4D. I have to keep it secret for a whole year. I didn't even tell the actors we're doing 4D. They wondered why they were smelling everything. they only found out a few weeks ago. But I thought if somebody comes out with 4D, then I'll have to be ready with a 5D a month later, because if someone next summer, you know, this summer had 4D, I would have had to be ready with a 5D.
Did they really question why they were smelling things?
No, they didn't. That's what's good. I integrated into the story so well. Now they look back and they go, hey, what are we saying? What's that smell? What are we doing? they never questioned it. It was very integrated into the story.
And what was the 5D? Or is that a secret?
It's a secret because I'm going to use it now. But it was something I could tag on at the last minute if I needed to. I was already ready to be able to tag it on just to have a fifth, be able to say 5D. But now I'll get to explore it a little further.
So will the 4D, the DVD for it end up with
We've made them the right size so that it fit in the DVDs. We make a whole bunch. They'll fit in the DVD cases. And you get it whether you see it in a 3D theater or a 2D theater. So anywhere you go, you see 4D for free. You don't have to pay for the extra stuff.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's a bargain.
Such a deal.
I like deals.
Where's the Frazetta Museum going to be? Is it in a dedicated building? No, it's in a dedicated building.
It'll be in a dedicated building in Austin.
Is it being built, or?
It's one that we'll find an old building that we like downtown, probably, and renovate it, put it in there, and make it like an experience. I'm using my set builders who do all my sets. Go in and make it feel like you're walking into this world. There won't be white walls and the museum pieces up. I have a test one up in my studio already, and it looks really amazing. The Frazetta saw it, and they were like, this is what Frank would have loved. He loved texture, and he loved this. Oh, he would have loved this.
And one more time, what was the, how did you get together with his family?
I've just known them for a long time. I worked with Frank and Dust Till Dawn, and I went up to the family's house to visit and see his gallery, because he had all his paintings there in his house years ago, just before I did Sin City. And we talked about some of their original ideas and turning those into movies, and they trusted me. They said, we need somebody to help us. He's passed away. We don't know what to do with the estate. We don't want to have to sell the paintings. So I said, well, let's not sell the paintings. He never sold a painting. Let's figure out a way not to sell the paintings by actually working his intellectual properties and making these projects and finding other ways to monetize so that the paintings actually can be still exhibited again.
Mm-hmm. That'll introduce them to a new generation.
Everyone else has sold all their paintings. Most artists sell their paintings.
Oh, yeah.
He always held on to him. So he did it for a reason. So we want to keep that legacy alive, that idea alive.
So it will introduce his work to more fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when is that going to open again? You said
Hopefully, by South by Southwest. It'll be a great timing. So many people are down there already. Mm-hmm. So we already have the paintings. We just need to clear out the building and put the stuff in. Okay. That would be awesome.
Well, I have a question. Just sort of on the creative level, just because I know with your involvement with South by Southwest, that the movie Hobo with a Shotgun kind of came out of that from your trailer thing, and I'm just curious if you'd actually seen it.
I did see it.
What did you think of the final product?
Well, I enjoyed it, of course, because I'm, you know, feel a little responsible for it. So it's kind of like your child brought you a movie they made. You know, mm-hmm. I kind of love it. Congratulations! I can't believe I have to congratulate it, because so many people have an idea and they don't follow through on the idea. And it's really, you know, if he goes and makes other movies, that'd be the best thing. You learn so much by doing something that you just get better and better. But you got to start with something. So it was pretty amazing that he went from a fake trailer to doing a full feature, and doing that on his own was pretty, you know, shows a lot of gumption.
Yeah, especially with somebody like Rutger Hauer.
With Rutger. Rutger's a great guy. Rutger had a blast. He said, okay, I got to go now. I'm shooting and running down the down the street while he was filming. He called me about it. Shoot. I worked him on Sin City. Running down the street, shooting and yelling, I gotta go.
So is what you've set up here something other filmmakers can copy? I mean, like the whole production, doing your own.
They would give them certainly the idea. They go, they call it breaking the M field. When someone else has done it, more people can suddenly do it. It's mm-hmm. not that what I'm doing is impossible. It's just some people sometimes always think to do it. Like when I made a movie for $7,000, it's not that it was impossible, but no one had done it before. And that same year, the next year, suddenly tons of movies came out that were made with no money, because people just realized, oh, it's possible. I could probably do it too, and they go and they do it. So just by, that's what they call that, you know, like the 100-yard dash can only be run in a certain amount of time until someone does it faster, and then suddenly hundreds of people can do it in that time. So this is kind of like a mental, you know, thing. So I think when people hear that that's possible, oh, you mean I don't have to go this other route? suddenly that route makes no sense anymore, and they only want to do it the new way.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me forever to convince people that editing digitally was the way of the future. I was the only movie, when I did Desperado in the Sony lot, cutting on a computer. Only the editors thought, what are you doing that for? Now you put a gun to their head, they won't edit on film. but you know, someone just has to kind of do it first, and then suddenly it's a good idea.
What's your technology background?
Last question, you guys, by the way.
What's your technology background that you were such an early adopter? I mean, had you harbored ideas of going into engineering?
Nothing at all. No, not at all. Always more artistic. This is my book about filmmaking that I tell people a lot. My first job working at a Photoshop, my boss gave me a camera to take home. He said, take pictures with a camera because you need to learn how to use the camera so you can help us sell the camera. So I took pictures. My brothers and sisters came back, and he saw the pictures, and he went, wow, you're really creative. You have to learn to be technical, because creative people always need technicians, and technicians always need creative people. And technicians just can't be creative. You're either born creative or you're not. You're creative, but you can apply yourself and learn to be technical. If you're creative and technical, you'll be unstoppable. When I was 16, I remember thinking, unstoppable. It made so much sense. And so I applied myself to really learn as much as I could technology and then use people who were more technical to help me out, but know enough about it. That's why I made Mariachi by myself. So I'd have to learn technically how to physically make the movie by myself, so you would never need anybody. And then you can do anything. And then you actually get excited about the technology because you realize it's ultimately going to free you. So you don't have to have this, oh, I don't understand it mentality and shut it off. You'd be open to it. Try to understand it. It's not your forte. But you'll go so much further if you know it.
Okay. Thank you guys so
much. Thank you so much.
You think about filmmakers who have been really successful, like Jim Cameron and George Lucas. Think about how technical they are and how they were able to really be very cutting edge because of their technical knowledge. John Lasseter, you know, Pixar and things like that. When you look at those people who are really successful, they married those two. And that wasn't their forte, but they learned it enough to be able to apply creativity to the technology.